Bail bonds.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Emily Beshin, counsel for Ronald Applegate, the appellant. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes.
Four minutes? Very well.
This is a case about the limits on a bounty hunter's privilege during their search for a bailee. What damages can they do to other people's property, and who can they injure without being held liable under the law? I'm asking this court to reverse the judgment of the trial court and remand this case back for a new trial with jury instructions consistent with the law that do not provide for a privilege to injure third parties or to enter third party property.
So you agree that the instructions the trial court gave were based on the restatement?
Absolutely.
Accurately based on the restatement?
Absolutely, that they're based on the restatement.
I mean, your quarrel is with the restatement. To the extent, I mean, because the restatement does create a privilege to break and enter the person's own house and other people's as well, and to use force under certain circumstances.
Well, the way that the restatement was applied in this case, I guess, is what our issue is. So in this case...
Well, I don't know that you can say that it's the way it was applied because we don't have a complete record here. Okay, my understanding of your case is that you think that the instructions were improper and so that the jury, was improperly instructed and could, might have reached a different verdict if they had not thought that these privileges existed.
That is correct.
Okay.
And
we're not going to get into any other question based on an incomplete record.
Okay.
It's just a question of do the challenge instructions correctly state the law? And if I understand your argument, they don't, and it's a legal argument.
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
So the restatement provisions as they were applied in this case is they were applied to bounty hunters. That has never been done before under the law. All the cases that have been cited by my opponent relate directly to law enforcement or government agents. And in this case, the legislature...
Okay, so and that is an interesting aspect of this case, is that you look for those words in the restatement that... Subsection D and subsection E that refer to bounty hunters.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find them in any case in the United States.
Correct, yes.
And you'd find very little about the restatement. But you do find the Washington RCW referring to Taylor versus Tainter.
Tainter? Yes.
All right. And do you agree that by that reference it brings in the English common law?
I agree that Taylor versus Tainter is valid law in Washington State and across, but what I don't agree with is that Taylor allows a privilege for bounty hunters to enter into anybody's property or to...
But that wasn't the issue in Tainter, was it?
It was not the issue.
Extradition. And so when the Tainter case says his house, they're not making a big point of, like, the bounty hunter has to go out and figure out exactly who owns what house. They're not saying that.
Well, they do specifically say his house.
They
break and enter into his house. And so that's been interpreted not by Washington State yet, but by a number of other states. And so we cite the various states that have decided upon that issue. And I think a Tennessee Attorney General opinion, when they were asked, can bounty hunters break and enter into third-party homes? And consistently they find no.
But those cases might be wrong, right? Do not correctly reflect the English common law from which Tainter was drawing.
I believe that they do. That those cases do correctly reflect the law.
Are you aware of the case of Shears versus Brooks?
I'm not familiar with that one, but I'd be happy.
That's
to
a case that was cited in the Nichols case from
okay.
New York, and it's one the portion of Nichols where it says, "And Lord Loughborough goes the entire length of this and says." Yes, you can get into the house and you can get into somebody else's house. What difference does it make? You're after the person, and where they are is the house that they're in. It's their house. Third parties can't shelter fugitives and expect to be immune from a bounty hunter coming in.
And in
basically
this,
what the English common law that I'm quoting says.
In this particular case, that is The picture that's been painted by my opponent of my client, Mr. Applegate, could not be further from the truth. He has called law enforcement on his own daughter multiple times. He in no way was trying to...
Okay, but we're getting, now you're getting into the facts of the case. The question is, let's assume that's all true, but you could argue... Could you not argue your theory of the case under the restatement and say that whatever the bounty hunters did was unreasonable?
We absolutely believe that what the bounty hunters did was unreasonable, but we also believe that applying the restatement to bounty hunters is inappropriate. The restatement provisions were clearly and have only ever been applied to law enforcement. Bounty hunters, these ones in particular, go around saying we don't have to abide by the Constitution, we're not state agents, and that's correct. They're not state agents. They don't have to abide by the Constitution. Because of that, they also don't get the privileges that law enforcement officers get. In the RCW that applies to bounty hunters, there's a specific provision that provides for immunity for law enforcement who are assisting bounty hunters. Nowhere in there does the legislature ever give immunity to the bounty hunters themselves.
Is it your position that the bounty hunters do not have privileges?
They do. I believe that they do have a privilege. I believe that they have a privilege to enter the home of the bailee, the residence of the bailee, and that comes by virtue of the contract. And so
if they had gone into, if Elizabeth Applegate had been living in a trailer in the back and they had gone into the trailer and got her, you would think that was all?
Yes.
The law would, the instruction allows that.
Absolutely, I do. She was not living in a trailer in the back.
So you draw the line at somebody else's house?
Correct. Any house that's not the residence of the bailee.
That's the bright line that you would draw.
Correct. And if that in that scenario, the bounty hunters can call law enforcement and they can bring law enforcement in, and then law enforcement can go enter into the house to obtain the fugitive.
Thank you. You have your rebuttal time.
May it please the court. My name is Spencer Freeman. I represent all of the respondents in this case. The major point in this case is whether or not the restatement second applies in the state of Washington as the law with regard to trespass. The appellant is wrong that there's only one instance in the state of Washington that the restatement second has been applied as with regard to the law of trespass, that being with law enforcement. We've cited four other instances where the appellate court and the Supreme Court has applied the restatement second of torts as it pertains
to the
law of trespass.
We're speaking of this particular section.
We are
205 and 206.
Right.
I do not believe those have been applied in Washington.
That's true, but all of the other sections, or many of the other sections of the restatement second of torts as it relates to trespass.
And what is your authority for the idea that once one section of the restatement of torts has been adopted, all others follow?
It's not necessarily that all others have to follow, but there's got to be some indication by the courts that there are certain reasons why only provisions are being applied. In this particular situation, it makes sense to continue to apply this. In part, as your point before, was that the RCWs themselves mentioned that the Taylor versus Tanner line of cases, and this particular restatement.
Taylor versus Tanner line of cases, are you saying that it's somehow related to a case like Brucci versus Kent?
No.
Or any of the other sections of the restatement other than 205 and 206?
I'm not, and there is no specific case in Washington that's applied 205, 204, 205, or 206 to...
Or other states.
Or other states. It really has not been addressed.
So it really is a question of first impression.
Yes, if with these particular sections, it is a question of first impression. However, it's not without consistent authority here in Washington. If you look at the RCWs and you look what the legislature did with regard to bounty hunters' ability to enter third property without consent. When you look at the planned force entry statute, it is absolutely contemplated that this is what bounty hunters are going to do and should be able to do, but they have to do it with reasonable cause to believe that the fugitive is inside that structure. So it's consistent. So we're looking at consistency in applying the restatement of these sections, the restatement of torts.
But shouldn't we be asking where, if we're going to adopt 205 and 206, shouldn't we know where it comes from?
You mean the absolute beginnings of it?
Well, it's the restatement of the law.
It's a restatement second of torts, correct.
So when they make the restatement, they find cases, they look at a lot of cases where courts have been presented with, in this case, bounty hunters and
right.
their activities.
Right.
And have ruled that certain activities are
are privileged, certain types of activities.
Correct.
And so counsel here has pointed out that there are a number of cases in the United States that have said you don't get to unqualifiedly go into the homes of third parties. I think there's one that says if you see him inside, then you get to go in.
But let's look at those cases. First of all, two of the cases cited by the appellant have specifically been overturned, and that's not been informed of this court. The case out of New Mexico, the Lopez case, the Tenth Circuit District Court, and then it was affirmed on the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals that conviction and that ruling was overturned because the application of the Extradition Act in that case, according to the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, contradicted a fugitive recovery agent's ability to go into a third.
But that's a different question, isn't it, extradition? We're not speaking here of a problem with extradition and going across
No question, but the lower court in that matter made its ruling based off of application of the extradition statute. On a writ of habeas corpus, the Tenth Circuit said you can't interpret the extradition statute as that because it prohibits the fugitive recovery agents from being able to do what they're permitted to do, which is go in to a third-party residence if the defendant is there or believed to be there.
I would like to ask you, since time is short, about a question that isn't squarely presented, just because it seems like an interesting question.
So, yeah.
And that is the question of whether it is permissible for bounty hunters to come to a residence looking for someone and saying that they have a warrant. In this case, there's an extensive colloquy where, you know, the two lawyers and the judge were talking about various things, and there was quite a discussion about that issue. And Judge Snyder felt that it was not appropriate to do that, and you were arguing that, oh, well, that's hair-splitting, and that, yes, there's nothing wrong with them saying that. So I'm asking you that because there are other cases which indicate that's not a good idea, and it occurs to me to wonder whether you, in representing bounty hunters, have come to the belief that that's okay, and in fact, perhaps they're even trained that it's okay to do that because, of course, they're more likely to get in if they say they've got a warrant.
No, so first of all, my preferences would be that they would not make that statement because it can confuse a situation as to their role, whether or not they're a fugitive recovery agent or there as actual licensed, sanctioned law enforcement. If they've made an absolute declaration that they're a fugitive recovery agent and who they're there representing, then I don't think that confusion is there. But the use of the term warrants can create the confusion. So I think in certain circumstances it may add to a situation.
The purpose of Section 206 is to ensure clarity. The idea is that a third party forfeits the right to the peacefulness of their home if they're correctly advised what the situation is,
right,
and they decline a demand that the fugitive be produced.
Right.
So would you agree then that if the explanation given for the bondsman being there is false, that falls outside of Section 206, which requires after explanation and demand?
Well, that's a factual determination for the jury to make.
Whether it needs to be true is not a factual determination. Whether it needs to be true is a legal determination. Whether the words uttered made it false might be a factual determination. But don't you agree with me that the explanation given must be true in order to get the benefit of rule of Section 206?
With the language that you're using,
I'm not using it. The restatement uses it.
Okay,
used only after explanation and demand for admittance. Doesn't that mean a truthful explanation?
To the best that the circumstances allow, for sure. But that same section also say unless it's reasonably determined that the explanation can't be given, which
not the explanation, the demand.
But it has to apply to both. I mean, if somebody's...
It doesn't say that.
Okay.
So now you want to restate the restatement? It says demand.
Not.
You're the one that's asking us to recognize. Reasonably believes such demand to be impractical or useless.
If
it says what it says, right?
That's right. And I'm not saying that it can be an untrue statement, but I also won't concede that the statement that there's a warrant or I've got a warrant is an untrue statement.
Is it untrue if they don't have a warrant?
There is a warrant that exists, and they have a contract.
Do they have it?
No, they don't physically have the warrant with them. But it becomes a little bit of hair splitting because there's a warrant that exists. They have the authority to apprehend. The common public does not understand what a fugitive recovery bond contract is, but they do understand what a warrant is.
Let me ask you another question because the time is short. And let's get back to Washington statutes. 18.185.300(3) says as follows: any law enforcement officer who assists in or is in attendance during a planned force entry is immune from civil action for damages arising out of actions taken by the bail bond recovery agent or agents conducting the forced entry. Reading that, that seems to make some distinction between law enforcement officer, which your clients are not,
correct,
and bail bond recovery agent,
correct,
with respect to damages. What do we do with that in the context of the argument that you're making?
Well, we're not arguing for any immunity. And the application of the restatement of torts still provide the opportunity for a plaintiff to recover damages if the bounty hunters are there unreasonably or if they exceed their privilege to be there. There's still the opportunity for damages. So it doesn't limit the fact that there's the immunity mentioned for the officers but not for the fugitive recovery agents just means that the fugitive recovery agents extend and go beyond the privileges on which they're allowed to be on the property. There's damages that can ensue. We're not arguing for the Wild West. And the restatement of second of torts does not promote and allow for the Wild West, and that is not what occurred here either. Fugitive recovery agents cannot run onto a piece of property without, with their guns blazing, without reasonable cause to be there. In fact, with their guns out unholstered at all, without responding to a reasonable use of force. So the law is there. The restatement.
You're taking a risk, aren't you? I mean, I'm just, you say you're not the Wild West. We see throughout the country there are criminal cases where, bounty hunters, bail recovery agents have gotten in criminal trouble because they did act like the Wild West.
Sure.
And I'm assuming that this is correctly stating your argument that the protection for third parties and for the public in general is the reasonableness that is required, so that whenever you go in, particularly if you go into a home of third parties and particularly if any force is used, you're always looking over your shoulder at a jury that might be determining whether that was reasonable under the circumstances.
That's correct. In fact, if you apply that reasonable standard to the cases listed by the appellant where the bounty hunters were deemed to have violated the law, the restatement would still find the same consistent finding in those cases.
Thank you, counsel.
In court instruction number 17, that's the instruction with regards to trespass. It states in it the defendant intentionally and unreasonably committed an act or acts while knowing or having reason to know that he did not have plaintiff's permission or a privilege to be on plaintiff's property. And so that instruction in itself says that there is immunity for the bounty hunters. As long as they think that they have a privilege to be there, then the plaintiff can't recover. We spoke with jurors afterwards. They wanted to provide recovery, but they said that under the instructions that they were given, it was just not possible. As the court has stated before, this is a case of first impression of whether this court is going to adopt these restatement provisions and apply them to bounty hunters. It is an important issue for the court. There's been a number of instances where, as the court has said, there's been criminal issues. I think recently in Pierce County, a mother was shot and killed after bounty hunters came to get her son. In Arizona last summer, there was also a anonymous tip similar to our case that was made to a bounty hunter saying, the guy that you're looking for is at this particular address. The bounty hunters went there, and it happened to be the chief of police's residence. They drew firearms on the chief of police and his family. It turned out to be a prank that had been pulled by providing this anonymous tip. But under the restatement provisions, if they're applied to bounty hunters, that's okay. It's okay for bounty hunters to get an anonymous tip and to say, well, we've got information that this person may be at this residence, so we can go break into that residence and do as we please.
Well, but wait a second, though. I mean, you're saying that as a matter of law, it's reasonable, but let's assume you're the plaintiff's attorney in the wrongful death lawsuit against the bail bondsman. Doesn't 205 and 206 give you the ability to argue your theory of the case, which is that
it was not reasonable to rely on an anonymous tip without verifying in some way that it was correct.
We also are required to prove under the instructions that were given that the bounty hunters didn't know that they didn't have a privilege to be there. So all that has to happen under those instructions
is a trespass.
Correct.
Okay, but it's, I am talking about murder, assault, rape, whatever other crimes might happen. I mean, a criminal or civil trespass is what you're talking about here in this instruction.
That's correct, yes. Yeah,
so I don't know that it necessarily goes for murder or...
Can you repeat your question?
Well, whether it in a wrongful death lawsuit, wouldn't you have the ability to argue your theory of the case that it was unreasonable to rely on a confidential informant's tip to engage in those kinds of activities? Don't you think a jury would be kind of sympathetic to that argument?
Policy-wise, I don't think that it's appropriate to allow bounty hunters to break and enter into a house based on their own version.
It's okay that for them to have a privilege to go into his own house. Now, let's say his own house, let's say that his own house was one that there were a lot of other people in.
Yes.
Mothers, babies.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and but it is his house, so under your theory, the bounty hunter gets to go in.
That's correct, yes. And I don't
even
think...
Even if it results in mayhem.
Right, and I think Portney...
And even then, you'd be able to come in and argue, well, he had the privilege to go in, he didn't have the privilege to ransack, rape, rob, and pillage.
Right, and I think that Portney from Washington State does address that, in that that case was the house of the Bailey, but it was also his mother's house, too, and right. They assaulted the mother going in, and they found that that was not proper. Conviction was affirmed on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
You.
We...